This is URN.
The Film Show Breakdown.
So there's not really much out at the moment. We've done Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, and we've kind of looked at Solo in a big heated debate. So there's not much out, but we can look forward to the summer and talk about what we're kind of anticipating. So has anyone got any film that they're absolutely looking forward to?
I'm really, really excited for Incredibles 2. I know we've talked about it before, but like seeing the American reviews come out now, like I'm trying not to read them because I don't want any spoilers for it, because obviously it's been like 14-ish years in the making now.
Yeah.
But I sort of see, I follow a lot of like reviewers on YouTube, and I'm trying to gauge by the thumbnail if they look happy or disappointed and trying not to watch the review. But it seems like it's doing okay.
Yeah, so. No, I've heard it's doing well. It's 8.5 on IMDb, which it'll go down, obviously, because only 8,000 people have voted so far, which probably means not many people have actually seen it. But yeah, it'll do well, and I reckon it's going to stay number one at the box office pretty much all summer. Like, there might be something that comes along and knocks it off, but it'll probably go back up there. It just feels like a film that doesn't really upset anyone.
You think it might be a bit, have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
It's not out yet.
It's now in the UK.
No, I thought about streaming it illegally, but I thought, I can't do that.
Come on.
It would just be awful quality.
I've seen, like, not to spoil all about it, right, I will say one thing. Maybe it's a bit too safe.
Not much going on with it.
I've seen that it might be a bit too safe.
Okay.
So we'll see. That might be why it's getting decent reviews, in that, you know, it's just like, it's all right.
When we did it with Joe, who's not here today, we kind of talked about how it's a film about family.
Yeah.
And loads of people say, like, they're people with like superpowers, but they're not superheroes yet, and then they learn how to work together and they become superheroes. And I feel like this film's going to be about parenting, so it's like, again, like pandering to like the audience of the time when they were young, and now they're older, having kids and stuff.
I'm kind of annoyed that like they're not aged up more. Like, I don't know why it's continuing straight on. That bothers
like,
me a bit.
Straight on, like moments.
Why does that bother you?
I think they could have done a lot more with like changing the characters a bit and like seeing how they've developed.
But if they made an Incredibles 2 that didn't show me what happened when that after the Underminer came, and I'd be so mad.
You can do that, and then you can do like a flash forward.
I'd be so mad if they. Yeah.
Did anyone play the Secret of the Underminer video game when they were younger?
Did, yeah. Don't remember much about it.
So you don't know. Oh, so there's no basis for comparison then to see if that game's actually going to be factually accurate, because that might end up being quite redundant now. Like, people can be like, no, that's not what happens in The Incredibles 2. This game's rubbish.
Yeah.
Good game.
I don't remember. The first Incredibles game was better.
Fair enough.
Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
So Incredibles 2, that's one that's coming out. Jay, are you really looking forward to Sicario 2?
No, I'm not, actually, weirdly. Because we all know how much I love the first Sicario.
We were going in to see Solo the other day, and they were playing a trailer for Sicario out in the foyer, and I went, oh, do you reckon that's going to be any good, or do you reckon it'll be a bit rubbish, a bit mediocre? And Jay went, no, it's going to be awful, because the first Sicario was awful.
No,
the first Sicario sucked.
That's not even the reason why I think it's going to be awful. It's because it's changed director, same characters. Like, it's only two of the same characters or whatever, so Emily Blunt's not even in it.
It looks like they've gone for an even darker storyline. I don't know how they do that,
and it just looks like a crappy action film.
Yeah.
And they've completely gone against the whole point and tone of the just to franchise it and make it an action franchise, which is so.
But didn't you dislike Sicario because you thought it was a bit slow and boring? So if they've hyped up the action, isn't that more what you wanted?
No, not at all.
What did you want?
I didn't want anything. No one wants Sicario 2.
Jamie, what did you want from the first one?
Oh, I don't really know. I wasn't really expecting much, to be honest.
Mm.
And then, it was really slow and boring, and Emily Blunt was a bit, like, of a really...
She's a bit blunt.
Yeah.
I was going to say that when I realised that's a terrible joke.
Everyone's like,
yeah, well, that's why I missed it.
Just a really weak female character, which I thought was a bit crap as well.
Interesting. Yeah, well... Fair enough. It's the same writer, Taylor Sheridan. I didn't realise that, from Hell or High Water.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, who wrote Hell or High Water, Wind River, and Sicario.
I haven't actually seen Wind River or Sicario, but
I rewatched Wind River the other day. Wind River is a fantastic film, really interesting. And Sicario, I liked Sicario. You like other villain in films, though.
Yeah,
you directed Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah.
You liked Blade
Arrival,
Runner.
Blade Runner.
But you just thought the Rolling Hill bit was a bit boring.
Yeah, I distinctly remember a bit in Sicario where they, like, meeting, two people are meeting on top top of a rooftop, and it's like, right, I'm going to do like a wide angle shot of the rooftop for 5 minutes, and then another shot of someone walking up a ladder for 5 minutes, and then one of them just walking across the roof for I'm like, yeah. Oh my god, just get on with it, please. Yeah. So it was like a two and a half hours.
Yeah,
like,
no, it's a long film. I was reading a review of the Telegraph. I don't like the Telegraph. I had to have a bath in holy water after I read it. But they do really interesting film reviews, and they were like, he's such a pretentious director, only he could take on the next Blade Runner film. And I'm especially like, yeah, actually, I think you're quite right in that sense. Like, he was actually perfect for Blade Runner,
yeah,
but maybe not for an alien film about language. I don't know, who knows.
I quite liked Arrival.
I personally liked Arrival, great, yeah.
Well, you liked the book, didn't you?
Yeah, the short story, yeah.
And you didn't think that tarnished the film?
No, not at all. They're sort of kind of different versions. I saw the film first and then I read the story, and the story is just interesting to kind of experience what goes on in that film without saying too much in that medium. But I think they are just separate entities, and I'm happy to have both, to be honest.
Yeah, a bit like the two Shinings with like Kubrick's and Stephen King's.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
No, that's good, because my lecturer said she doesn't want to see Arrival because she loved the book so much. I was like, well, she's got to look at it as two different things.
Like, yeah.
You got, like, it's not going to ruin the book if you don't like the movie, is it?
It just ruined the film.
How many bad adaptions has there been, like, honestly?
Les Mis.
Oh, yes.
Not start that again.
Is that going to be a film to avoid again?
Yeah, well, yeah, Les Mis is... Oh, everyone seems to like it. Go watch Les Mis. I'm sure you have a great time. I just didn't. I don't know why I didn't like it that much, but there we go. I'm really looking forward to Mission Impossible Fallout. I think that's going to be really good. Was it you, Jamie, that made a comment about Tom Cruise hurting himself and like just keep going on? Might have been Joe, actually.
Oh, he broke his ankle. Is that the one where he broke his ankle?
Yeah, he tried to like jump a roof and like landed really funny, but they just kept like stumbling on anyway.
Yeah. Well, I didn't say about Tom Cruise. I think I appreciate what he's doing, like his age. Fair play.
Is that a bit of a dig?
I mean, it can't help how old he is, isn't it? I won't say that's a dig.
No, I think it was Joe that said that. I think we were talking about the fact that you just sort of go into those films now and it's like, how close are we watching Tom Cruise nearly die? Like, how close to death are we seeing him do this time? And it's,
Well, that's what I really like about it. I love that they just up it every time.
That's the appeal of the films, though. Like, how's Tom Cruise going to, like, do a stupid stunt?
You can't top hanging onto the wing of a plane as it
takes
off.
That's ludicrous.
It was amazing, honestly. And, like, that's the beginning of the film. And for me, we were 10 minutes in, I was in the IMAX at South Bank, and I was like, this is amazing, I'm having the best time ever. And it stayed at that level. I really enjoyed it.
Good way to start the film, then.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, they knew what they were doing.
Yeah. And I'm pleased that Simon Pegg's got like a major role in this film now.
He seems to be like a main recurring character at this point. Like,
people just seem to really like him.
He was just put in as like not like a joke, but it's supposed to be like a joker character.
Yeah,
like,
it was like a sidekick. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. He's
the brains of the operation.
I like him as well, because he seems to be a bit more like... I've only seen that the last one, but he seemed to be a bit more like the everyman as well, that sort of the audience can kind of get on board with.
Are you saying most people don't hang on the side of planes?
I mean, kind of.
So, yeah, I think those three films are probably the ones we're most looking forward to. Is there any film coming out... You can say no. Is there any film coming out that you really don't think is going to do very well? Or you're not looking forward to?
I can get my list out.
Well, yeah, for you it's the Meg films. Oh, the Meg.
Oh, the Meg looks like a laugh, though. The Meg does look like a laugh.
I haven't watched the trailer, but it looks like Deep Blue Sea.
I generally do have a list here.
It looks like Ocean's 8.
Is that out yet?
That's out now, yeah. I've heard mixed things.
Aquaman.
Aquaman's going to do bad, though.
Bumblebee.
Bumblebee will be naff.
Venom. Although, that might be okay.
Nah, I think Venom. Venom will do good. Venom will make good money.
Wreck-It Ralph 2. Oh, God.
I have no hope for Venom at all after that first trailer.
Purge. Literally, I do have a list right. The next Fantastic Beasts.
Wait, first Purge. Are we going backwards now?
As in, it's the Purge franchise.
Is this like the fourth one they've made? We didn't need more than one.
The franchise never recovered from like wasting the concept with the first movie. Now they've tried to backtrack every time and go, oh yeah, like a night where everyone can do whatever they want. Maybe we should do like a bigger film about that. But the first one was just like a generic home invasion movie.
Yeah.
No, definitely. And I'm sorry, but the teenage girl in it is probably played by like a 25-year-old actress. She was in a schoolgirl outfit the whole time, like in a tartan skirt.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, no one wears a tartan skirt to school.
No, like, nobody looks like that.
And it's like, come on, either make her 25 or like make her a teenager and not put her in a tartan skirt. You're sick. And they were just giving Lena Headey from Game of Thrones like a a film role, I felt like. Yeah. I felt like she kind of got bums
it
on
was,
seats. For
I kind of liked the antagonist in that, though. He was so ludicrously happy the whole time and just getting into it.
He was quite good, because he's actually Australian in real life.
He sort of knew what film he was in, I think.
Yeah. It's definitely creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Have you seen The First Purge, Joe?
No, I haven't seen any Purge.
Don't worry. You're not missing out.
No,
on
I wouldn't
anything.
Bother.
The best use of a song in a film. So we're not talking about like an original score in this sense. We're talking about an actual song that everyone knew before that's been put into a film. So does anyone want to kick us off? Has anyone got one that's burning to mind?
Yeah, I'll go. The film Watchmen has a really cool bit at the start.
Was that directed by Zack Snyder?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Sorry, just love it or hate it. It's quite some contention with if it's good or bad, whatever. I really like it. But there's this bit at the start where it's like, so it's an alternate reality Earth and Nixon's the president and stuff, and there's like,
it's set in the 60s.
Yeah. And there's like threat of nuclear war is like even bigger than it is in our real universe.
Yeah, no, Nixon was president and there is a threat of nuclear war. So.
Yeah, I know. I realised that. Like, he got re-elected or something. I don't know the actual...
It's basically if that trajectory continued rather than...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a whole time...
Trump era.
Time lapse scene where it's, like, slow-mo going through how this group of, like, vigilantes sort of disbands and reforms over time, and it plays to the song... I think it's just called Times They Are... They Are A-Changing by Bob Dylan.
Yeah. Do you remember in Anchorman, they go, Bob Dylan once wrote, The Times They Are A-Changing. Ron Burgundy had never heard this song.
Don't remember that.
Fair. Well, either way, yeah. That's an easy way for always... That's
yeah, but it's really cool because it's like... The way they film it as well, it's like slow motion and sort of slowly panning across these like kind of freeze frame... What do you call it when like everything's frozen...
Yeah, I suppose
freeze frame or like
there's like a word for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I've lost it as well. Tableau.
Yeah. Kind of like a tableau of all these situations that these characters are in while
like
that song's
going
playing.
Through the alternative history. Actually different.
And so you're getting a sense of like what this version of Earth is like, and also like the like where what's happened to all these vigilantes and stuff, and yeah, it's really cool.
And I feel like it feels like a song. Obviously it's by Bob Dylan. It feels like it's kind of got, it's a bit sort of country and western in a way, like in that music. It's kind of like, oh, America's such a great place, and it's almost like a bit not as non-contrapuntal as say like Stuck in the Middle with You from Reservoir Dogs, but a bit like almost like telling you things are good when they're maybe not.
Yeah, because like, yeah, exactly. It's like the difference between like the song's sort of a bit uplifting, like, you know, changing for good, but while what's going on in the film, in the scenes are like, wow, this is all really horrible stuff that's happening.
So. There was another use of a song in a film as well from Watchmen, wasn't there, that you wanted to mention?
Yeah, we'll just give an honourable mention, the Hallelujah, to the bit where
Leonard Cohen's version.
Yeah, the really slow, deep voice version when, you know, things are happening on a certain owl spaceship. But yeah, honourable mention to that bit.
Is Watchmen still one of your favourite films?
Oh yeah,
because I remember you always said Watchmen was...
But thinking back at it, I don't think it's about the film, it's more about the story than the film.
Yeah, sure. Or like,
so maybe I just like the graphic novel. Maybe that's it.
But you quite like the moral complexity as well. You're like, yeah, no, the bad guy's actually doing the right thing. Like,
yeah, I do.
You got like really passionate about it.
Yeah.
I think I was just too young for it.
Because there really is a lot going on, and like there's a bit at the end, like blink and you'll miss it scene where you like realise that one thing that happened just completely derails the whole plan of what, you know, the bad guy's doing, which you find out is actually a good thing, but then the good guy
wins.
Is not on board. And then oh, okay, it's really good. But yeah, so moving on.
What a mess. Next? There we go, Watchmen.
The one I want to pick is actually from The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. It's quite a sort of weird middling film. I know a lot of like even Wes Anderson fans are sort of like, oh, it's not very good. It's kind of got like a special place for me though, because I think this one scene with this song kind of just sort of saves the film somehow. I really hope I pronounce it right. It's Staralfur by Sigur Rós. I don't know if that's
Sigur
how you say
Rós,
it.
Nice.
Yeah. And it plays, can I spoil the film? Technically, it came out in like 2000.
It spoiled itself.
Came out in 2000. All right, yeah. It came out in 2005, though, so I feel like we've, I can talk about this end. It's basically that Steve Zissou, who's played really well by Bill Murray, is spending this whole very weird film going about trying to kill this shark that ate his friend, which sounds ludicrous, and it kind of is.
Jaws the Revenge.
Pretty much. But they get to the end where his whole plan for this film is just to have this revenge mission and go and blow up this shark that kind of killed his friend. And
it's definitely Jaws.
It is definitely Jaws. And in the process, he's done things like he's lost, like, his relationships have fallen apart, and like he's lost his son, and someone who might have been his son, they don't know, and things like that. And you just get to this final scene where they finally confront this shark, and this song starts to play, and it could be so stupid, I think, without the music, because it's kind of got this really weird, like, sort of the shark's doing this kind of like stop motion work which looks quite childish, which, like, you could find really funny if it wasn't handled right. And I think this song and Bill Murray's performance in it just kind of gives it that sort of childlike wonder, and it's really the breaking definitely. Point for that character, and like it does make me well up a little bit every time, despite the film that is a bit, you know, hit and miss. Yeah. In general, that one scene at the end where he's just sort of like faces the shark and people say, "Oh, you know, do you still want to blow it up?" And he just goes, "No, we're out of dynamite anyway." And he just, like, kind of takes in the beauty of it. And he's made to feel so small, and all his grief from the whole film just kind of comes together at that point.
Yeah.
And he just looks at the shark and he just says, "I wonder if it remembers me." And like, I love that. I think it's really, really interesting that he's sort of dwarfed by all these events that have kind of changed him throughout the film. And this song is just overwhelming in that scene as well. And it's just a really, really good scene. Like, the film is absolutely very middling. I know people can't get through it, and like, it's very strange thing to get into, like all Wes Anderson films are as well, but I think this one has some weird editing choices and things like that people struggle with. But I think that end scene just really saves the film for me in my eyes, is that like that final moment of all that emotion coming together works really quite well.
No, that's good. I feel like sometimes with Wes Anderson it's like the strangeness of the environment,
yeah,
whereas maybe Steve Zissou might actually be the strangeness of the filmmaking itself.
I think it is, yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting you say Sigur Rós, because they do seem to have this really like poignant effect in films, like in Danny Boyle's 127 Hours. Has anyone seen it?
I've not.
So there's a bit where Aaron, the main character played by James Franco, finally chops his arm off.
Oh god, yeah.
Yeah, and he's trying to get home. And that you just hear this Sigur Rós song playing, and it's a 10-minute song, and the first 5 minutes is sort of this build up. It's very sort of background, and you're like, oh, he's probably not gonna make it. And the music just picks up and gets stronger and stronger, and it's all about how he decided to live, you know, it was a split moment decision where he could either die or live with that. And that as well has, I think, the same effect really.
Yeah, I would agree.
So yeah, it's interesting you picked out Sigur Rós really, yeah, because yeah, they do seem to have this massive emotional effect at the end of a film where, yeah, it's like it kind of all pours out in that scene in a certain way anyway.
Yeah, they're very good at kind of bringing that together. I mean, you see things like their version of like, well, their version, their song Hoppipola, like get sort of exploited on things like X Factor all the time, so obviously people are fully aware of like the emotional intent that they have, but they are used best when they are used in a film in that way, and can really build that scene to its emotional climax. And like I say, so much of the scene in Steve Zissou could be really, really silly without it, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Have you got an honourable mention you want to shout out as well?
Not really.
We can come back.
You're looking at me like I'm meant to.
No, not at all. Just in case you have a burning one. I have a list of like 9 things in front of me.
I mean, like, always shout out to Just Dropped In from Big Lebowski, but we talked about it quite recently, so.
Yeah, well, we like to recycle on this show, yeah, but that's no bad thing, because like, let's face it, Dunkirk was good.
My answer is quite completely recycling. I'm tempted to talk about Remember Me for like the 20th time and the dual
I'm
use of it.
I'm actually taking it off the cartwheel. We can't even play it.
Fair play.
What
honestly, it's about time. I am going to talk about a director we never talk about on this show called Edgar Wright. Probably never heard of him.
Yeah. Amazing.
So who
is Edgar Wright?
He's directed one or two films, and they're not very good, I'm afraid.
Well, okay.
No, so I was going to talk about like Baby Driver, and obviously like, the use of action in there, and like sometimes it can be emotional or like impactful, but I actually want to talk about a more comedic use that Edgar Wright has done before, which is in Shaun of the Dead.
Yep.
In the pub scene at the end with Don't Stop Me Now.
Yeah.
So we've talked about how like music has been used to really talk about the personality of a character or bring a scene down to like a more personal level. I think this moment in Shaun of the Dead is definitely more comedic, but it also feels like something the film has been building up to, because it's not really an action film.
No.
But this like funny moment where
it's a
zom-com. Yeah. It's this moment where we're just like
pending.
Wailing on a guy on a zombie with like snooky cues, and like, don't stop me now, he's playing in Time with the Beat.
Yeah.
They're doing it in Time with the Beat. You can see like the setup for Baby Driver.
Definitely.
And how it,
yeah,
like this is like practice for that, and I think it's just a really fun moment, and it's sort of like a release for the characters as well.
Yeah,
because
that's true.
What I like about it is when it stops, you just hear the sort of tone deaf groans of the zombie.
Yeah, because he's drawing their attention,
like,
as well.
Oh yeah, well, I forgot, we're the zombie apocalypse.
Not only is it funny, but it's a plot point as well.
Let's not forget about the zombies that are just outside still. It's like, it's a really like grounding, like, oh yeah, I forgot, yeah, they're still here.
And also, what, when we ever talk about Shaun of the Dead, Jay, what's the quote you always use?
I don't know. Which one?
I forget, you're not a performing monkey. But you always go, Ed, kill the queen.
Oh, yeah, Ed, kill the queen. What? What?
But I just think it's brilliant that in that scene, because obviously it comes on earlier and Ed's like, oh, who put this on? And Sean's like, it's all random. And then it comes on and it's like the worst possible song you want at that time. And the whole day has just been an utter cock up. It just keeps going.
It's all random.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, see.
I should rewatch it, definitely. But in case there's anyone out there who doesn't know Shaun of the Dead, definitely a recommended film. Yeah. A really good zombie romantic comedy.
Definitely.
And it was like the launch of Edgar Wright's career.
Yeah, no.
And you saw, like, yeah, the early groundwork for what would be like his later biggest successes.
Yeah, and I hope they keep coming as well. I feel like Scott Pilgrim is an underrated film. It's very sort of punk.
I'd say so. The use of music is that as well, with the actual live bands and music sometimes actually playing along to the fight scenes, which like heightens the video game tie-in.
Yeah. He seems to have these sort of niche ideas that seem to work really well.
He likes music.
definitely. And obviously I have to give an honourable mention to the one man that loves music, Quentin Tarantino.
Of course.
And I think everyone thinks of best use of song in a film, Reservoir Dogs. That's everyone's go-to. We're Stuck in the Middle with You. But I actually think Django Unchained is so good for a soundtrack. Like, even at the end, you've got Too Old to Die Young, Encore Qui, you've got some Ennio Morricone in there, and then you've got like Unchained with the shootout with Tupac and James Brown.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
Like, what a good idea for like a bit of James Brown jazz rap like fusion in a shootout with like an ex-slave trying to fight his way out of these southern freaks, basically. I think that's so good. But what I'm going to go for is Trainspotting, when they do It's Such a Perfect Day. When has anyone seen Trainspotting?
Nope. Not for a long time.
I know the song.
Okay. So Ewan McGregor, basically, his character Mark Renton ODs on heroin, and he's basically being dragged down the stairs. But he's hallucinating that he's sunk into the carpet. So you just get carpet in the scene, and it's like he's sunk into a coffin. In a way, and he's being dragged down the stairs, and I just dump him on the side of the pavement, waiting for an ambulance. It's quite a harrowing scene, actually. Sorry, Mum, if you're listening. But It's Such a Perfect Day is playing, and it just kind of sums up the whole film perfectly, where it's just an awful situation, but they seem to just, they're addicted to it, and like for them that is a perfect day for them in a way. I've also got to shout out Donnie Darko. I think Mad World is such a good use of a song in a film as well.
Yeah. Mm. So, can I just shout out Mr. Blue Sky for every montage scene ever?
Yeah.
Those scenes are really good.
That was really good. Can I also shout out, just because Jamie brought up Edgar Wright, the uses in World's End, the use of Loaded, both actually as a song and also how they bring up the dialogue to represent Gary's character, Gary King, but also the song of the use of the whiskey song by The Doors, which is sort of about, I think, four pubs in, and they've started to realise something's going wrong, and it's got this weird circusy hurdy-gurdy type feel to it, and it's just really great to sort of disorient them all, and I think that's a great use.
Yeah, no, I think, yeah, Edgar Wright and Tarantino seem to be, like, on the money for music right now. And Danny Boyle as well, to be fair. Oh, to be fair, there's so many good music. And obviously, when we did our Black Panther special, we actually took time to actually talk about the soundtrack, even though not a lot of the songs featured in it. Like, when I hear that soundtrack, I just think of the film. So I think that's done in a really good way. Ages and ages and ages ago, if we throw our minds back to the Oscar season, which, let's be honest, we did to death.
Yeah.
Like, so many times.
And now we're talking about,
there's a swear jar here. I feel like we need, like, a Dunkirk jar for every time we bring up Dunkirk.
Or Blade Runner, the sequel.
Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, or Blade Runner. And anyway, I said to everyone, I thought it'd be a great idea if everyone sends me pretty much every category, and we'll do the URN Awards or the Film Show Awards of what, as...
everyone involved in the film show, because at one point there were like 17 people, even though only about 8 people have actually made it on air. I said, send me through all your nominations and I'll top them all up and we'll work out the winner for each category. I got about 10 minutes in and I'd done like one person and it was just going to take forever. Yeah. So what we've done is we've done the best picture winner. So I suppose I haven't really got a drum roll here, but I'll do a runner-up. The runner-up, just to annoy Jay, it was 3 billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri.
And I'm glad it didn't win.
And the winner, does anyone want to take a guess at what we
Dunkirk.
Did? Yeah, it was Dunkirk. Obviously, it was Dunkirk.
You said about the Dunkirk, Joe. I kind of get where it was.
Where did my boy Get Out come?
Get Out got one vote.
Feels bad.
Yeah.
That was my vote.
Oh, actually, no. Sorry. You got 2.
Oh, yeah.
Ibby voted for Get Out as well. That's his best picture. Lady Bird got 2. Call my name. It's a shame. I think if I'd done it earlier, I might have been able to rope more people in to get involved. But Dunkirk is the winner. So how do we feel about that?
Makes sense. I mean, I voted for it, but yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, I think out of everyone, I think only like 2 people didn't vote for Dunkirk as their best picture.
I mean, it's very cinematic, so winning a award for being the best film makes sense.
Yeah, no, definitely. Does anyone think
if Blade Runner 2049 was on there, I would have like voted for that.
I think Blade Runner might have actually taken it as well, actually, because a lot of people seemed really involved in Blade Runner. Sorry, I'm trying to read it off a bit of paper. Jamie, you didn't see Dunkirk till like December or very late on, didn't you?
Oh yeah, I watched it late, didn't I? I watched it in like, I believe I watched it New Year's Day.
Oh right.
I got it specifically to watch then. Yeah, it was really good. Like, I was so impressed. I was sad was that I did not see it in the cinema.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I went to see it twice, so that counts as one time. Plus, didn't you hear about it loads before you actually went to see it as well?
I heard about it. There's a lot of hype around it. I saw Blade Runner 2049 in cinema, so maybe I'm biased to the visuals in that because I actually managed to see it on the big screen.
I feel like we've kind of talked about Dunkirk enough, but we were talking about Christopher Nolan and what his next plan is, and like, I honestly
it's
have
not
no
James
idea.
Bond. It's
no,
not
that's
Bond.
What I was going to say. I can't believe it. Do we like? Didn't it get confirmed who is going to be doing it?
Yeah, who signed up for that?
I can't remember.
I think they have signed someone up, but apparently Christopher Nolan said he'd only do it if Tom Hardy played Bond.
It's
anyway.
Not Danny Boyle, is it? They've signed up.
No, but that might be good. He did do a bit of James Bond direction.
Yeah. There was speculation about Danny Boyle.
The Olympics. I think Sam Mendes did a really good job of Skyfall. Yeah. He just dropped the ball a bit on Spectre. I felt a bit lazy.
I think he's very competent. What's he doing next? Do we know?
Sam Mendes?
Yeah.
Not sure. No, he's probably outside Lidl, like, filming plastic bags floating around or something. I'm not sure. But, yeah, I don't know. We'll look forward to seeing what he's doing. There are a few directors I can keep my eye on. But, yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I just feel like we deserve a good James Bond film, finally.
Yeah, I mean, I liked Casino Royale.
Yeah, they should all be at that standard. I swear Bond's big enough. Like, there's a museum in London for James Bond. Yeah. Like,
who did that? Casino Royale, do you remember?
No, I don't remember.
Nah, I don't.
No. My phone's Quantum dead, of Solace was such a step down. It's like almost unbelievable.
That was during the writing strike. So actually,
fair enough.
It wasn't written by official writers, or there was something involved. It was during the strike in 2008, so it was going to be a bit now.
I heard a thing that apparently, like, James Bond always follows the trajectory of whatever popular action films are out at the time. So,
oh, that's interesting.
The start of
but popular doesn't always mean good.
The start of Daniel Craig's Bond was the Bourne films. So they're basically like it's James Bourne,
nice.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of wondering, like,
is the next film's gonna have like 80s music playing over the
where it's gonna go? So what sort of big action films are out at the moment? Like,
it's gonna be skyscraper themed.
Yeah, it's gonna be like Fast and Furious, where he's just gonna get a family and they're gonna, you know, ride together.
Fast and Furious not big at the time? That's been around for
years. I mean, like, the franchise. I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but
what franchise is the popular one?
I think
that James
we're getting
Bond's
a little bit
into.
Sick of the sort of the way they're doing James Bond at the moment. So I think that might need to change at some point.
I think that's why Christopher Nolan would have been such a good choice. Yeah. Let's have it in a chopped up order.
Yeah,
like throwing back together.
The place to look to is whatever is popular, because that's normally the trajectory that James Bond follows.
Let's face it, at this rate, Dwayne Johnson probably will even play James Bond.
He'll
be called Dwayne Bond. I don't know, who knows?
He's just going to rock bottom people into it. Yeah, anyway.
So,
I didn't realise the time. So anyway, well done Dunkirk, well done Three Billboards, very well deserved, both of you. So Jay, last week we did The Godfather recast into a modern cast, and it was really successful. So what have you got for us this week?
So this week we're recasting Pulp Fiction. So I mean, we've talked about some of these already, so we'll just get cracking.
I like surprise though.
Vincent Vega, who's John Travolta's character, he's going to be played by Channing Tatum in my one. That was a suggestion by Joe Campbell.
Yeah,
friend of the show.
Shout out, Joe.
Basically, just because he's sort of can play the not really bumbling guy, but just
I think he's proved he's quite versatile.
Makes mistakes, but smoothly.
Yeah,
if you know what I mean.
And plus, we can see him in the long hair because of 21 Jump Street at the start.
Jules, who's Samuel Jackson, but Daniel Kaluuya. Just because he's like the new hotness, and he can play intimidating as well.
Yeah.
I was thinking of a load of people who could do like the funny side of him, but I was like, I can't picture them being the intimidating side when he's in the cafe.
I think Daniel Kaluuya
could do both.
Daniel Kaluuya was very good in Get Out as being like, are you serious? Like, he's very good at that. Are you kidding me kind of thing?
I've also seen him in the Mitchell and Webb look, so I know he can do comedy.
Oh, fair enough.
Butch. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, just because he's played young Bruce Willis in a different film
In Looper. Shout out Ryan Johnson,
like, you know what. He kind of looks like he can do it, he's done it before.
I think that's a good shout.
Mia Wallace, who you suggested as Margot Robbie.
Just
an it girl, basically.
It's just
can
like
play a sort of
seductress. I mean, half of the film spoiler that Uma Thurman was ODing anyway, so I didn't play a good song over it, shame.
The Wolf. the Wolf, who comes to fix all your problems.
Harvey Keitel's character.
Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
I like that one too.
If he puts the effort in.
I mean, I can just picture him in the suit already, just like...
I can imagine that.
Ordering people what to do.
Although Harvey Keitel was actually only 2 years older than Robert De Niro, so actually...
Downey Jr.?
Yeah. Oh, no, sorry. I was thinking of Robert De Niro.
No, Danny Jr.
Robert De Niro's Iron Man.
Robert De Niro would work, though.
It's been a long day. Robert De Niro would work.
Quentin Tarantino, who I don't know his name in this character name.
Jimmy.
Ryan Reynolds.
I think
he can play frantic.
Yeah.
And like, gobby as well. Like, just doesn't shut up. So, I mean, we've seen that in Deadpool. Marcellus Wallace, Dave Bautista, just because he's massive. I can literally get over it.
Yes, that would be good.
And he can go medieval on people's asses. And then I've got one more, which is the bonus one. Marvin, who is literally any actor, because he's in it for like 5 seconds and gets shot in the face.
Fair enough. Ryan Gosling then, because he wasn't on the
list. Ryan Gosling, there you go. Ryan Gosling can play Marvin.